Okay, this hour, Conversations with Linda, your phone calls, your stories, maybe your tips. So we'll be back in a moment with you and her on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Linda Moulton Howe, of course, earthfiles.com. And this is the hour we set aside where you can call in, talk with her about the stories you've been hearing, maybe stories you have, or some of the past stories Linda has been working on. She heads up earthfiles.com and, of course, travels all over the country, bringing you unique and fascinating stories. And Linda, can you believe we're rolling into April already?
No, in 2 weeks, April 13th to 15th, I'm going to be in Eureka Springs for the Ozark Conference there, which is always fun because it's such a beautiful...
Oh, the late Bev Yeager's event.
Yeah, and then May 4th to 6th, David Politis, who does all the missing people research, mm-hmm. He's having a 2018 Mile High Mystery Conference, and it's going to be in the, it's called the Sally Bush Community Building in Green Mountain Falls, Colorado, which is south of Denver, not far from the beautiful Manitou Springs there. And it's going to be really fun because there, between David, myself, and some other speakers, we're going to be covering Sasquatch, UFOs, animal mutilations, and how they may all fit together. So that is, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope there are people listening in Colorado who would like to make it down south of Denver for that gathering, because this is something new that David only did a small one last year, and there's been so much interest that we're all coming together.
Oh, it's fascinating. I just had him on my Beyond Belief television program, and you've got your Truth Hunters shows running with Gaia as well. I'll be talking about that later.
And David is terrific.
He's the best.
His research on missing people is so important, but it's also going on into this whole big world of what are the Sasquatch sightings that are in some of the same rural forested area where people go missing.
Well, this is what's so weird, though, Linda, because, you know, you would think if a Sasquatch or an animal or something came swooping down on somebody, you'd hear people scream or you'd hear the sounds of the animals. These people who are in the area testify that, you know, they turned around and little Jimmy was gone without a sound.
That's right. And for the most part, also, people have had face-to-face encounters with the Sasquatch, and one is an anthropologist who has written about it, that they seem to be more afraid of people than anything, and that they tend to run off and not be aggressive toward humans. So there are all kinds of contradictions, and yet, in my book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, there's a whole big section of they were a small farm family living up in Snohomish, and Snohomish, Washington, there have been so many Sasquatch sightings, animal mutilations, human abductions, lights, beams, everything in Snohomish, Washington, raising a question quite literally, and I think with some reason in some of the people there, is there some kind of an underground habitation by a phenomena that might include something like the Sasquatch, because people have seen Sasquatch either in craft or lowered down beams of light, and these descriptions have come in the human abduction syndrome. So what exactly are the monitors of Earth might be the big question.
Let's go to the phones now. We've got Thomas in La Jolla, California to get us started. Hey, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. And by the way, George, that was a fantastic interview with Wilbur Allen.
Thank you.
Last night.
Yeah, on portals.
Yeah, on portals and his UFO photography. It was just great. And Linda, you know, you're doing magnificent work, Linda. Just, wow, you hit it out of the park.
Thanks.
My question, Linda, the first two segments were on the San Luis Valley.
Right.
And the Sangre de Cristos Mountains there in Colorado. And I'm curious, there prior to the 20th century, there had to be oral traditions, stories, narratives by the First Nation indigenous peoples, such as the Paiute, the Sioux Nation, Hopi, the Navajo, stories that are passed down by the elders, you know, from generation to generation about missing animals, mutilated animals, missing people, like Dave Politis speaks about, that type of thing, sky people, star people. And I'm curious, have you researched that, or do you know people who have researched these oral traditions from the First Nation people prior to the European settlers?
To some degree, as I mentioned in my report, the Navajo did consider, and they do to this day, that Mount Blanca, they revere it. It's an actual reverence. And it's so interesting because back in 79 to 80, when I was producing A Strange Harvest about animal mutilations, the crew and I were down in Dulce and Alamosa and Walsenburg and that area between Colorado and New Mexico. And on one particular day, I was scheduled through the police department in Dulce to meet with some of the Apaches. And the idea was that they had reports by several people who had seen a very large, it was round, disc-shaped craft, and it was at night, and it came down over a cement factory in Dulce, and that it was so dramatic, and there were multiple eyewitnesses, and the idea was that when this came down, they were also having tremendous numbers of animal mutilations at the same time that this craft showed up over this cement factory. So the crew and I were waiting with a police officer, and somebody came and said that the Apaches had some kind of a meeting and that they decided that they did not want to offend or make angry what they called the star people. That was the phrase they were using when we were there. The star people who had to have been connected to this big UFO. And when I asked the police officer, do you have any idea if any of the eyewitnesses saw what was the UFO doing? Was there any interaction with this cement factory or place in Dulce? Why would it be hovering over the cement place? The answer I got was that, yes, there were people who had some kind of an idea or an impression of why, but they had this meeting, and they were not going to talk about it publicly because they were literally afraid of offending the star people, and then they would have grief in Dulce. Mm. And so I never got the interview. And interesting, since then, I have had private conversations with Hopi, with Navajo, with half a dozen Native Americans, and they have talked to me about some very serious subjects, but they don't want it talked about publicly. And that's one of the kind of contradictions in the world that we're living in, that there are so many subjects that are off limits. And as a reporter and a journalist, I would prefer to have the Navajo or the Hopi speak for themselves. But if they decide that the time is not right, then you either say, well, I'm going to summarize what they've told me, or you wait. And right now there's quite a lot of conversation going on behind the scenes with the Hopi, for sure, about this being a time in which they feel that we could be headed toward an existential threat. And an existential threat, by definition, means a lot of catastrophe.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an interesting time period.
Yeah.
It really is. Great time to be alive, too, though, Linda, isn't it?
Oh, I'm extremely excited. I do not feel afraid. And I think that one way or the other, that every thing that has come back through the remote viewers and time travelers, quote unquote, that humanity makes it out into the solar system and into this Milky Way galaxy. And that if the time travelers that have been accessed by the remote viewers are actually humans coming back from a point that's in the future that we haven't reached yet consciously, but they have come back, like maybe the crop formations themselves are related, then it means that in an odd way, phenomenon gives us a kind of reinforcement that humans are evolving into some kind of a relationship with the future, that sometimes on this planet when there is so much violence and it seems depressing what humans do to each other, that we're never going to get off this planet in one whole piece. But we now have Elon Musk, who is going to be racing with Jeff Bezos of Amazon, and they're going to be racing Qi of China, and that we're going to have a race for Mars.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And it's all private.
And it's exciting, I think.
Let's go to Ed in Iowa, first-time caller. Ed, you're on with Linda Moulton Howe.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Sure.
Been listening for about 2 years. I learn something just about every night.
Well, thank you for joining our family.
I can't believe I made it on. Two quick comments for you and one for Miss Howe.
Okay.
In the past, you've talked about UFOs and how they seem to be more prevalent when there's some kind of major activity going on in the area.
Right.
And last year during our primary in Iowa, the 2 days before the primary, I had a UFO go over me about 120 feet off the ground.
Wow.
And during the general, the night of the general, I had the same type of craft go over me about 120 feet off the ground.
They're interested in our politics too then, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I'm kind of open to everything. It was kind of triangular shape, like if you took a metal coat hanger and made it into a soft triangle. There was no sound, you know, no lights, no nothing. And I found a picture on the internet similar to it, and I accidentally deleted my history. It's kind of funny. It took me about 20 minutes to find it, and I haven't been able to find anything like it since.
Well, Google Phoenix Lights and see if that might be what you saw.
Okay. I saw an actual picture of it, but, you know, there was no lights, no sound.
Yeah, okay.
30 feet wide, 60 feet long. The other thing is every night when you play your ending song, I just wondered if you were related to the Hopis or the Mayans in a past life, because I always see you dancing around a campfire dressed like some kind of a phoenix bird or something. And I always wondered.
You never know. You never know.
Could I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, jump in, Linda. Go ahead. And then he's got something for you.
Yeah, when the triangle was close over you, do you remember having any impressions of hieroglyphs or symbols or images?
It was kind of funny. I thought I heard a duck quacking, and it was like, 11 o'clock at night. And I thought, well, ducks don't fly at night. And I just happened to look up, and here comes this object just floating over the top of me. And there was no markings, no lights, no sound. And it was kind of a tan color on the bottom.
Oh, what color?
Kind of a tan.
Tan.
T-A-N. Tan color.
And what I'm wondering about, because some people in the presence of some of the craft at a close distance will get what probably are telepathic downloads, often with symbols or hieroglyphs or images.
Fantastic. And Ed, you had a comment for Linda?
I just wondered if you had any kind of a mental impression when the triangle was right over you.
No, I did not receive any feelings or vibrations or telepathic or anything. It just
nothing like that.
Came out of the darkness and glided over the top of me and went off to the southwest. And the second time it came out of the north and kind of dropped down out of the fog, out of the clouds, you know, about 100 feet above the street lights, and just kind of soared back up into the clouds.
Like it went. And Ed, you had a question for Linda while you have her?
Oh, yes, sir. You were talking about the ranch, about the man that had the cattle looking for their babies, and you thought maybe it might be some kind of alien activity.
Well, or something that could cause invisibility so it could be present where the baby calves were, that caused alarm to the adults. And this idea that we have been dealing with an alien intelligence or intelligences on this planet for a very long time, that are extremely sophisticated with invisibility and projecting holograms that we cannot discern any difference from the world around us. And yet something can be either invisible or projecting a hologram, which is actively downloading and uploading information. I think you can take that to the bank that is happening on our planet everywhere.
Do you think there's any trickery involved, Linda, by governments to try to trick us into UFO invasions or anything like that? There's always been that talk of that.
Well, yes, I'm very familiar with the concept, and I remember a period at the end of the 80s into the early 90s when there were a lot of discussion, is the CIA, NSA, DIA, and RO, are they getting ready to try to project a second coming of Christ?
Project Bluebeam or something, wasn't it?
Project Bluebeam, and that there is a technology that John Burroughs and I have been reading about recently where we are able to project lasers to interact with plasmas in a very certain specific way that will be able to reproduce the human voice when it is refined by simply the interaction of lasers with plasma. Now, in reading about this, this is real. This is not hypothetical. It's work that's being done.
Right.
And if we're working on that, perhaps we're working on it because it is an example of back engineering from some kind of an alien technology that we've been exposed to. But then it also increases that question. If it is true that the Greeks and the Sumerians and the Anunnaki were a non-human intelligence on this planet, and that all of the mythological stories about, quote, gods, close quote, speaking or communicating with booming voices from the top of a mountain, if it could be explained by what we are just now beginning to do technologically, that could be the back engineering of alien technology.
What took us so long? We're going to come back with more calls, conversations with Linda on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us, our final segment. Linda, always have fun when you're on the program, but I just can't believe we're going into April. You know, it seems like just yesterday you and I were talking about moving your schedule around for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and here we are again.
I know. Everything is speeding up. And actually, you know, there have been some scientists who have suggested that if there is an interaction between our planet, the arm that we're in this particular point in the Milky Way galaxy, and if there is some interaction with the big black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy that may pulse energy, that we might actually, if we knew the truth, we might actually be on a planet that instead of slowing down has speeded up a little bit.
That could be. That could. What do you think of the we're living in a digital world theory?
Oh, I really, really think that as more and more papers come out, the idea that another dimension is projecting a holographic universe, ours, for reasons that are not understood or known in terms of wanting proof in fact, but that all of the religious literature of the centuries, that it might be that the avatars and the idea of angelic beings and a divine field, that it could be that this was a universe created specifically with a holographic projection to be this training ground for the souls, which is what Thomas Campbell has said and written about, that this is an entropy reduction trainer for souls, and that the strangeness, this is a very strange universe in many ways, and the more our physics refines and becomes more and more sophisticated, it is the quantum physicists. It is that world that is trying to study and make sense of dark energy and dark matter and photons and entanglement, and increasingly nothing works, George, unless there are other dimensions outside of this matter universe.
So true. So true. Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, Linda. I have two questions. First, on the magnetic pull of the Earth that you were talking about. What's interesting is, like, okay, a rock at the beach after the sun goes down retains that heat, where if you sit on it, it's almost like sitting on a rock in the middle of the day. And they say cities retain heat due to the concrete and actually stay warmer. And another thing was the ships in World War II, when they shot at each other, they incorporated the aim for the magnetic pull of the Earth, where they would aim like to the left and down, I believe. So I'm wondering if the changes would accentuate either of those two processes. There would be more heat retention, you know, from the ozone layer being compromised, or the magnetic pull would be accentuated at sea.
Well, these are all good questions, and I have talked with several scientists who say that, you know, they run computer models with different ingredients trying to project, would this be what happens? And the truth is, it's still conjecture. We do not know what happened exactly 780,000 years ago. And they, when I've asked over and over again to several different scientists over the last 10 years, what would happen in a magnetic pole reversal to Earth life and marine animals and birds? And the answer always is, we don't know. And another interesting part of all this is, if you try to ask just straightforwardly, why does the Earth change its magnetic poles? You will find that there are some hypotheses that say that it is a relationship between the big iron core at the center of the Earth, which it's astonishing to realize that there it is 70% the diameter of our moon. The iron core at the center of our Earth
is amazing.
70% the diameter of our moon.
And it's moving, isn't it?
And it moves, it rotates in one direction, in liquid iron with some nickel in it that is like a liquid.
It's like an ocean around it, right?
And so you have this huge iron crystal sphere that is moving one direction inside of this melted iron that is flowing the opposite direction, and that's what sets up our dynamo. And then you have the mantle, which has been variously described as a little more dense jello that is hot, and it goes all the way up to underneath the rind that we live on. The average distance between where your house is or your building or where you're driving your car is 15 to 25 miles, some places thinner. That's the rind that we all live on. It's only that much. and it sits on top of this vast, incomprehensible mantle. And it is only when the mantle reaches certain points in interaction with what we call this rind that we live on, that it becomes liquid. Until then, and that's then the magma that comes out in a volcano. But it is more dense than jello, maybe even going even further, but it's hot, and it is plastic, it's flexible, but it is a odd alien world between the rind that we live on and this huge, huge crystal iron sphere at the center. And that when you contemplate that nobody really fully understands why would the Earth go for 780,000 years with the North Pole in the Arctic region, the South Pole, magnetic pole in the Antarctic region, and then in the 21st century and maybe the 22nd, what occurs in this planet that would have those poles change? And a very interesting hypothesis is that it may have something to do with the interaction of the dynamo and other ingredients that affect our solar system, and that there has to be a north and south pole and a magnet. There has to be a change in all of those iron molecules in that big, huge sphere that's 70% the diameter of the moon. It all has to happen there, and it has to become aligned in that big iron crystal sphere before the magnetic poles will change.
Will change and shift, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big mystery.
Let's go to Wayne in Chicago. Hi, Wayne. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, George. I would just like to thank you and people like Ms. Howe for just searching for the truth and trying to bring the truth out to the human race. I really would like to thank you guys for that.
You're very
thank
welcome.
You for the thank you, because it is a very difficult path, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine, with all the forces opposing the truth.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to ask is, you know, the human race, are there any written records, like when the human race first started, maybe, from interactions with extraterrestrials? Because I know, like, the library at Alexandria burned, and
right.
When one warlike group would take over another group, they always try to get rid of the history, you know, and replace it with their own. And
right.
I think that was you, Ms. Howe, who was saying, like, even the Smithsonian dropping stuff in the middle of the ocean is really a shame to hide the knowledge from the human race like they're doing. But I was just wondering, since the beginning of man's Homo sapiens sapiens existence, is there any written record of interaction with extraterrestrials?
Well, I guess you could say that the cuneiform on the thousands and thousands of clay tablets and clay preservation from the cuneiform, that Zechariah Sitchin would argue that that's what all of his 12 books were about, was the translation of an extraterrestrial relationship between the human race that was deliberately kept dumb and blind and under the control of a species that was here and either pretended on purpose or manifested itself to humans not with deliberate intent to deceive and manipulate. But either way, I think Zechariah Sitchin would argue that the so-called Sumerian gods or Anunnaki gods were ETs that took advantage of what they made. They took advantage of the fact that They manipulated DNA in already evolving primates on this planet in order to create a slave labor race, if that was the first intent. And they needed something that would be strong and vital on this planet in a heavily oxygenated atmosphere. So Sitchin, because he did so much work for so long, would argue that then that world of the Sumerian to the Anunnaki kept tweaking the manipulation of the genetic makeup of the standing up primates that they brought into being. And when you boil it all down, you have a story of other intelligences that can mix and match genes the way a six-year-old can put together Tinker Toys. It's that easy to them, and they can make anything that they want for whatever purpose that they want. I believe myself, I think that there's a lot of strength in the argument that I have heard through government sources that that is true. Now, where this runs up against a problem on the earth in some quarters is that there are still fundamentalist Christians and a few other aspects in the religious category who would say that the divine field created humans. Well, I personally think there's a compromise here that is gets to be more, from my point of view, more accurate. I have no doubt there is a divine field that I've always related to as having no entropy. There's no time, there's no entropy. And it's responsible for all dimensions and matter worlds. Well, what it set in motion, if free will is one of the big challenges in all life, in all universes, in all dimensions, then the idea that there would be advanced intelligences in this particular matter universe that might be a training ground for souls would make then the idea that there could be advanced beings who came to this part of the solar system. They wanted gold, they wanted rare metals, they wanted to harvest things for their needs, but they didn't want to do the work. And so, because it's so easy for them, they just picked out something that they thought that they could create to be a slave labor race, and that is the true definition of the beginning of humanity on the earth.
They were our gods, weren't they?
And that those beings promoted or provoked humans to relate to them as gods. And that's where a lot of the problems, I think, begin. But you can come back to a much broader view, and it's one that I prefer, and that is every single thing in this universe, everything was set in motion by the divine field.
I think so, too. Linda, almost out of time. Give out your websites and where people can still get some of your books and DVDs.
Yes. Earthfiles.com is in a new WordPress website. I love it. We're in the process still of refining, and all of my photos that I've referenced tonight will be big and large, and I'll have them all up by tomorrow night for sure. And at Earthfiles, my Earthfiles shop has the four books I've done, three documentaries I've done in DVDs. They're always available at the same approximate prices that they've always been, not some of these jacked up prices that you find on Amazon and eBay. So go to earthfiles.com, explore my brand new, what I think is an exciting web format, and go to the Earthfiles shop. Everything helps. This is a very, very difficult path to be on. Some days it feels like I'm trying to walk through razor blades. So for those of you out there who are interested in the pressure of fact and trying to get to real truth, not politicized truth, not manipulated by advanced beings that could run rings around us.
Well, you're the one to do it. And that's Linda Moulton Howe at earthfiles.com. Thanks, Linda. We'll talk to you again next month. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.